Hey everyone, are you a 1099 worker, someone who's self-employed? Are you maybe working in the marijuana business? I know that includes a lot of 1099 workers. Are you a self-employed soccer coach? I know that checks a lot of boxes. Are you in the real estate space like myself? If so, again, it's no surprise to you, you're a 1099 worker, but those of you that are employed by someone, maybe that is news to you. Nonetheless, I think a common hurdle a lot of 1099 workers deal with is buying a home because they either deal with a lot of cash or maybe they have to have a lot of write-offs. Off so they don't get taxed as much. Not to say that's that different than all of us. None of us want to get taxed a lot, but 1099 workers seem to be affected the most when it comes to that. So here's where I'm going with this. You have options to get into a home. Hey everyone, I'm Nick Uppert with RE/MAX Top Producers, a Southern California real estate agent. And with me as always is Jalen McKenna coming out of Denver, Colorado. And today we'll be discussing the 1099 ideas and tips for those individuals that fit this niche within our society and how we can help better inform you and help you navigate this sometimes tricky space when it comes to buying a home as a 1099 worker.
Welcome to Beyond Real Estate with Jalik, the podcast discussing parenting, real estate, and business. Every week we go in depth on how to become successful in life and business. Nick, take it away.
So, Jalen, first and foremost, with your background and knowledge within the lending world, what can you share with us in terms of those options that 1099 workers have to get into a home?
Oh boy, it can feel like you are up Schitt's Creek without a paddle. If you are a 1099 worker and you have ever tried to get pre-approved for a loan, I'm sure you know the pain and struggles that come along with that.
Check.
Did you write off too much? Did you write off too little? Oh, my taxes haven't come back. How much should I be writing off? What do I need to do? It's all very confusing and there doesn't seem to be a very clear-cut reasoning for any of it. So let's talk about, just first and foremost, who, as Nick alluded to, you got independent contractors, you have soccer coaches, coaches of any kind, really, small business owners, depending on what kind of work you do. You might have a tree trimming business or you're a subcontractor for a general contractor. And so they pay you with 1099, but you still work for them. And so what the is going on? Basically, here's how we can answer this question. Do you receive, instead of a W-2 every year, a 1099 sheet from either one or multiple employers? Doesn't matter what you do. Doesn't matter what you sell, coach. Do you receive that 1099? Because if you do, you're all in the same boat, no matter if you're working for someone or you own your own business and you're a subcontractor for someone. Doesn't matter. 1099. Let's first talk about what you shouldn't be doing. And boy, howdy, we're going to talk about just one or two things because this varies from situation to situation. But please, for the love of God, don't write off everything. There's been so many people I have seen that go in and write off anything. Is money coming out of my bank account? It is now a business expense. Stop. Don't do that. Especially if you're wanting to buy a home in the next 2 years. Now, I'm not a CPA. This is all my opinion when it comes to the mortgage world. Just I don't get sued by anyone or the government. But don't do that. And here's the reason why. If you are writing off something that comes out of your bank statement or bank account every single month and it's not business related, you shouldn't be writing it off. One, because that's not what the purpose of business write-offs are for. From my understanding, again, my opinion, I'm not a certified CPA. But two, if you're trying to get a mortgage, the underwriter wants to make sure you can afford one. And if it shows that at the end of every month, you have $1,000 in the bank because you have taken into account your rent and all of your food, your groceries, whatever it is. If those are coming out every single month, the underwriter's not going to let you add that income back to your gross income as a one-time deduction or a deduction that isn't housing related. So they're not going to let you qualify for as much money. That's the biggest one. Please don't do that. The other one is file your taxes. I don't know why I have to say this, but please file your taxes. One, you legally have to. And two, if you don't have tax returns, you can't get a conventional mortgage or an FHA mortgage. Like you limit your abilities to get any kind of mortgage significantly if you don't file your taxes.
You said don't write off everything, but surely there's some things that's like, yes, do that. That's not going to be a problem. what isn't the problem then? Because you said what not to do, and it was don't write off everything. So
yeah. Here are some things that you can write off. Basically anything that actually has to do with your business. That's good.
Meals?
Meals eating out, that there's a limit on those, and it's only 50%. You can only write off up to 50% of your total amount of meal.
Colorado.
This is, I'm going to say Colorado specific. Yeah, this is another CPA question.
Yep.
Again, I'm not, but here I'll go with 100% here in Colorado, because each state is different, because why the hell not? Taxes were complicated enough. We had to make it different from state to state. Mileage, so you can generally deduct your mileage, and that's usually the 25 cents per mile. So again, the way that they have it here in Colorado is mileage is deducted if it's to a client or from a client. So right. You can't deduct your mileage to and from work.
Right.
And if you work in the office,
right.
Those are things you can write off. Your meals, if you had, again, anything, you bought a new truck,
so,
or you had repairs for something,
yep.
Or your work related something, write those off.
Okay.
Again, in my opinion.
So just be specific. And I think it's fair to reiterate here, if you're a 1099 worker, it's well worth your money to invest in a CPA who knows the ins and outs to say,
yes,
look, you're getting risky by doing this or not doing this, button this up. Because again, we are bringing this back to 1099 workers. You do have options to buy a house, but you're only going to be doing yourself more a favor by aligning yourself with someone who knows taxes inside and out. Because again, your space is unique based on the write-offs, based on how you make money and how often you make that money. Jay, let's dig into that, those first couple of options that 1099 workers do have, because it's not that conventional way of financing. So what is it then?
Yeah.
Relatively simple, but different.
Yeah. And just to clarify, if you do want to, you can qualify for a conventional loan or a VA loan. You just have to jump through a few more hoops in the sense of making sure your business is buttoned up and tight, and you know what your income versus expenditures are every month, and you have that well documented. So I don't want to say that, but this is say that you can't get one of those traditional mortgages, but these next couple options are going to be for those people that you want to buy now, but you haven't been doing any of that, and you've been writing off everything for the past few years. So the first option I want to share is a bank statement loan, meaning the banks are going to look at what income you bring in every month, look at what expenditures you have every month, and generate a rough estimate of how much money you have moving forward that they can use for qualifying purposes.
And how far back are they going to ask to say, paper trail, we need that?
Generally, they need at least 12 months of bank statements. Right. That's a safe thing. And they don't want just your personal. They also want your business bank statements. They want all of your bank statements to make sure that they're getting a complete picture of what they're doing and how much they're qualifying you for. So be aware of that there are other options. Now, why are these not just offered to everyone? Because the interest rates are atrocious. Like, I know some people are like, oh my gosh, interest rates have gone up so high recently. It's absolutely absurd.
Right.
I just can't imagine.
So
because they're 2%.
So 5.5%,
yeah.
If that's a normal rate right now, and we're talking about 5.5% to someone who has a 780 credit score, right?
Yeah.
What is that bank statement loan probably going to see?
If you're that qualified, you'll probably see about 0.25% to 0.5% higher on average. Again, this varies because there's a whole bunch of stuff, how much you're putting down, all that good shit. But now let's talk about a worst case scenario that one of my colleagues was helping him with this past week, who they're doing a bank statement loan. And the guy has some businesses that he owns, and they are self-employed, but 1099 workers too, because he's a subcontractor. He had a 640 score or there around. His interest rates, if the average you were looking at is around that 5.5, his interest rates were 9%. So
realities of decisions, right?
Yeah.
No, those were playing by. And not that you can't be surprised, just understand why that's different. Number one,
yeah.
It's a lower, relatively speaking, it's a lower credit score. And number two, you're a 1099 worker. You're needing a bank statement loan. Again, it's an option. Just know the rules of those options so you can make decisions accordingly.
Yep.
And now let's go right into bank statement loans fall into a category called non-QM loans or quality mortgages, which means the government will not back them. Now you might be thinking, the fuck do you mean the government's not going to back them?
Or some might say, yes, good. I don't want the government to back them.
Yeah, there's definitely a pros and cons list there as well. But when it comes to non-QM mortgages, it means that the bank institution you're getting the mortgage through aren't going to sell it off to the secondary market, which the secondary market are generally like Fannie, Freddie, those types of
good thing?
Big institutes. It means one, you're not very well qualified because you can't get a traditional loan. And two, it means they don't have to play really by any rules outside of the, these are available to anyone and everyone that qualifies along these parameters. They can't discriminate indiscriminately, but they can say, hey, if we're going to lend you this money through our institution, these are the exact parameters, and we're allowing you to have a little bit more risky loans. So again, usually with risk comes higher interest rates. Yep. Now that we know what a non-QM loan is, and some other examples of that just very quickly would be something like a hard money loan, which hard money is a set amount of time. You're able to borrow the money again at very high interest rates. Generally, you're making, for a set amount of time, and then you have to pay it all off.
What amount of that? 30 years?
No, it generally varies. And this can be from institute to institute. And again, since there's such high interest rates, they're usually pretty happy with renewing the loan for you at the end of it. But we're talking like 13% interest rates. So these are people with credits that just can't fucking get a house if they wanted to.
Okay.
And they really wanted to, so they paid the price.
And what's the payback period?
I've seen it can be anything. It can be month to month. It can be over a 5-year period at interest only. So you're not paying down your principal. You're paying just the interest payments at 13%, which can be the price of a regular mortgage. Yeah. So you need to get on it if you're in something like a hard money loan. But those are hard money loans, bank statement loans. Those are those non-QM products that you have available to you, but you need to know how to use them, and you need to have a game plan to get the F out of those sooner rather than later. So let's quickly talk about how to fix. How to fix the situation you're in if the only thing available to you are these non-QM products. And you say, I want to have those better interest rates. You don't want to pay over the top more. The easiest thing is, and I say easiest, still simple, should be easy, but it depends on who you are and how you live your life, is get with a CPA first and foremost, so that you can, if you're a business owner, 1099, and you haven't been deducting things or you've been deducting too much, to make sure that moving forward this year, you are able to get everything fixed and properly accounted for. Because when you file for taxes next year, you will be able to file taxes properly. And if you say you have amazing credit, say like I have an 800 credit score. I have an 800 credit score. Like, I shouldn't have to deal with this. I've just been filing my taxes improperly. Great. Good news. You're less than a year away from being approved for a conventional loan. Bad news. You can't buy this exact second, but you probably couldn't buy this exact second even if you wanted to. We've talked about this before. Go check out our other videos, like first-time homebuyer videos. But when you file your taxes properly, conventional loans only need to see 1 year, traditionally, on average, need to see just 1 year of tax returns and then a year-to-date profit and loss and from your CPA. So once you file correctly for 1 year, and if you have a good credit score already and down payment funds and all that good stuff in place, then you'll need that 1 year of tax returns. You don't need to have your 12 months of bank statements anymore. You don't need to have going off of that because you've been deducting too much or too little or what have you. The good news there is you're really close. And for those of you that are needing to do some other one, get with a lending professional. There are too many situations. A lending professional will pull credit. They will check you out, tell you what you need to fix in order to be able to own sooner rather than later. But that's really all I have, Nick. What are some final thoughts?
And I just want to reemphasize, whether you meant to say it or not, I would say do it in that order. Talk to a CPA first.
then talk to a lender, and then talk to the real estate agent to say, hey, I'm thinking of buying in these areas. Because again, you're just creating false hope if you're a 1099 worker and you haven't buttoned up things on the back end, because you're wasting your time as well as the real estate agent's time. So do not start with the real estate agent. If you're that 1099 worker, start with that CPA, certified personal accountant.
Yeah.
And then move into that lending space. Because again, it's how do you make the most of your time? That's one thing money can't buy. I don't care how much cash you have under your mattress, you're not buying time back. So be efficient with it. So that's my final thoughts is do it.
Yeah. And well, let me piggyback off of something you said there, because I'm sure there's someone that is out there that says, I make in my 1099 business, I make $12,000 a month. I should be able to afford whatever I want. I want to be shown the $1 million homes. Pump your brakes, bud. Because here's something that you're not thinking of. Say you go to the CPA and they say, you genuinely do, right? It costs you $8,000 a month to run your business. That's what you actually have. Like you, those are deductions. The underwriter's not gonna let you take back the $8,000 that are necessary to qualify you for. No, that's a recurring cost of business that you have to have. So they're not gonna let you say, oh, I'm comfortable making a $4,000 a month mortgage payment though. No, that's the only disposable income you get from this job. So understand that no, just because you make a ton of money, I had a guy do this. He made $300,000 a year, but he wrote off about $280,000 worth of business expenses.
Wow.
Some of them weren't necessary, but others were. And so you don't get to use $300,000 as your income. That's just not how it works. So yeah, be aware of all of this. Take what Nick said for the order of operations there. And thanks for listening, guys. I hope that you got something out of this, especially if you are just struggling and you want to buy a home, but you don't know where to start.
So guys, there you have it. Thank you for joining us on this episode of 1099 Workers and how to navigate this home buying process. We're here to help you through your situations and through this home buying process every step of the way. So if you're interested in learning more, be sure to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss another episode, or wherever you're seeing this, so that, again, you never miss an episode. We'll be back on Friday with Business Bookend. We're talking, what are we talking about this week, Jay, on Business Bookend?
This week, we're going to be diving into the all-powerful debate of working from home or working from office.
There you go.
The battle of the business models.
So again, another great topic to link in with. So give us a follow, give us a share with somebody that could maybe also benefit from it. So until next week, this is This Week for Real Estate Roundup.
Hey, thanks again for listening. If you want to hear more of Jalen McKenna, Colorado's mortgage dad, and his take on the Colorado real estate market, or just mortgages and mortgage news in general, check out the links below.
Also, check out the links below for more information on products, books, or references made in this podcast. And please don't forget to subscribe, like, and share.